I love the colorful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that blows.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers, season 2. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I was a creature not bound to this horrible, horrible earth and was allowed to fly, I would be a flying squirrel because I glide and I'm plotting the end of all humans.
If I were a flying creature that could escape this terrible, terrible planet, especially given that my state is constantly on fire, I would be a phoenix rises from the ashes.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I were...
I'm Joanna Robinson.
Still, Neil, if I were a flying creature, I would be a luck dragon, because they're magical and shit.
Yeah. You're listening to Storm of Spoilers with Dave, Joanna, and Neil, here to bring you a good vibes episode, because we did not want to make Joanna see Venom on her birthday, and I think we all just kind of needed it right now. But first... we got some business. If you're part of the Maesters and Small Council level Patreon donors at patreon.com/stormofspoilers, you'll get a bonus segment this week about the Spider-Verse. There's a new trailer, there's an awesome game, and there's a Venom movie coming out next week that everybody will hear about in the normal episode, but you'll get a little preview. And otherwise, I'm going to throw it over to Joanna to talk about... God of Thrones.
Oh, God of Thrones. I just want to let you guys know that God of Thrones is coming. Tickets go on sale a week from now, October 10th. And it's going to be in Nashville this year, if you didn't already know that. And the dates are July 12th through the 14th, 2019. The Music City Center, Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be there. All
Nashville.
Your friends will be there. You'll meet new friends. It'll be great. Maybe you'll meet an actor from the show, too, et cetera, et cetera. Okay.
There's going to be, like, at least 20 parties and events planned by our Slack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be Game of Thronesies year 2.
Oh, man.
I'll wear onesies.
Do I have to wear a different onesie next year, or can I just do the same one? Do I have to, like, buy a whole new one?
No, bud.
I'm using it as an excuse to buy a whole new one.
I mean, like, if you want to, sure.
Damn.
But
it's all on me.
If you don't, I think, you know, depending on like how pungent your Slack, I don't know why I said that, but like I know that you guys were all like sweating in your onesies last year. I don't know if they're washable.
Oh, I'm definitely gonna wash it.
All right, I have a few other messages for our Slack Patreon supporters. If you go to Storm Spoilers, what is it?
Patreon.com/stormofspoilers.
thank you. And donate like just at the $1 level. It's your basic entry fee into our Slack where we hang out and we chat with people and stuff like that. We also have a book club going, and I just want to let you guys know, I haven't talked about it too much in the main podcast, but like it's been really fun, at least for me, hopefully for other people. We've been reading books that are like soon to be turned into film or television. And, you know, that means we read Crazy Rich Asians. We read Sharp Objects. We read The Hate U Give. We read the Sisters Brothers. And, coming up this month, we're going to be reading, James Baldwin's If Beale Street Could Talk, which is, been turned into a film by Barry Jenkins, who directed Moonlight. And I've heard really good things about it. I will see the movie next week, but we are reading that book in the book club. And if you, just $1 donation will get you into the main Slack, and you can do that. If you want to donate above that, and if you have donated above that right now, we are rolling out new merch, new merchandise. Our small councils, our top tier, already has new merchandise. Our Maester level, which is our like middle tier, will soon have access to our new merchandise. And then after that, it will be rolled out to the rest of y'all. So, you know, these are just a few of the little things that we're doing in our Patreon Slack, which is just like an amazing community. And like people just hang out all day and talk to each other and don't go on Twitter, which is a garbage fire. So, I'm in favor of it. And While I have your attention, I will just read one quick review because you've heard me yammer long enough, I think. And this is from Vaguely Ethnic Jesus.
Nice.
Yes, Vaguely Ethnic Jesus. Shout out from his Fighting in the War, he or she's Fighting in the War Room review, where I said that Vaguely Ethnic Jesus is the perfect balance between white Jesus and real Jesus.
This is a really long review, so brace yourself. The headline is Everyone Rules, and then it says Joanna rules, Dave rules, Neil rules, I love you guys, this podcast is great, never stop. The end. So thank you guys so much for your reviews. Please keep leaving them on iTunes, we really appreciate them, and join us in the Slack if you want to hang out with us a little bit more.
Vaguely Ethnic Jesus going for some sort of review hat trick. I don't know what the third one's gonna be, but we'll see. I'm looking forward to where he pops up now.
Watch out, little gold man.
Yeah, that's right. Go look for a Vaguely Ethnic Jesus review this week. Neil?
Yes, hi.
Do you hear that rumbling in the distance?
I do.
Guess what time it is?
Well, we're going storm chasing.
Pew, 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 pew.
Yay.
So I'm gonna let y'all go first, because I think mine sort of dovetails into what we're actually talking about for the rest of this episode. So Dave, since you were not here last week,
yeah,
what storms were you chasing whilst you were away?
Well, last week I did my due diligence research for the Venom episode I thought we would be having, but rather than spoil that by going into it now, so I could, you know, have at least 15 minutes monologue time.
Is it still burning pod if it happens on the pod?
I think so, because it's on the wrong pod.
Got it.
Anyway, I wanted to bring attention to another thing that has been has captivated my attention for a few days now, which is a single sketch from the Adam Driver SNL that aired this weekend. It is called Career Day, in which he plays an oil man.
Oh, so good.
That slowly yells out a complex joke I don't want to ruin about how being an oil man means you need to crush your enemies into the ground. And I've been watching it several times a day since it came out. Java noticed and does not understand why I think it's so funny. So then I texted it to like my group text to my high school friends being like, is this especially weird or whatnot? And I got 4, this is hilarious, and 1, that's definitely your sense of humor, which is I'm going to take as not hilarious. So I think that Career Day from SNL is a hilarious sketch from SNL, and you should go look at it now so that you know how to crush your enemies into the ground and maybe understand my flying creature prompts from the beginning of this episode.
The Adam Driver episode of SNL, which was definitely a mixed bag for me, here's what I want to say. I get bummed when I think the wrong things get attention for SNL. And I just want to say that Adam Driver is an exquisite SNL host. And his 2 sketches, the Career Day one and then the like burger coffee one, were the highlights.
You didn't like the Fortnite one?
Well, the Fortnite is not for me. But this wasn't bad.
It's any tomatoes.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, but yeah, Adam Driver's just great at sketch work. He's so funny, and then like all anyone wants to talk about is fucking Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande. So I don't know. I just
and
Kanye West, and like Adam Driver's completely lost in all that. When I think
poor Adam Driver.
Oh yeah, poor star of the Star Wars movies. Okay. My storm chase might sound a little self-serving, but I don't mean it this way. But I got the opportunity this morning to help announce that one of my favorite TV shows of the last few years, called Sweet Vicious, is being
turned
into a comic
book. Oh, that was the announcement. I favorited it, but I didn't retweet it because I'm like, is this like something that I just wasn't on the internet for? Oh, that's great. This is great news. Keep going.
Yeah. It's great news. This MTV series... rest in peace, Sweet Vicious, was about 2 college girls, unlikely friends, who become sort of like vigilantes, I guess that's redundant, taking down sexual assault perpetrators on their college campus. And it was a great show, 10 episodes on MTV, created by Jen Robinson, no relation. And just like an amazing show that got canceled too soon as MTV pivoted away from scripted television to reality TV. And also it had really bad ratings. But like it was canceled April 2017. The Me Too movement kicks off in like October 2017. So like, I feel like if Sweet Fishes comes out like just 1 year later, it is like the most important show on television. You can still watch it on iTunes or Amazon, or as the creator of the show herself said, she's like, I don't give a fuck. Tell them to pirate it. But she can't legally say that. So I'm going to say that for her. Pirate it. Sweet Fishes is such a good show. If you don't want to watch it, or if you have already seen it or whatever, just know that Jen is also writing a comic book, inspired, like she got really ticked off watching the Brett Kavanaugh hearing. And so she like had this project in the works, but she just like kicked it into high gear. And basically was like crying and writing the comic book while she was watching the Brett Kavanaugh hearing. So, that sounds fun, right? But it's a really fun show, despite how like dark that all sounds. And it's, you know, it reminds me a lot of Veronica Mars and or Buffy the Vampire Slayer, two things that are very much my shit. And, the comic book will be out, you know, I think she said like, first quarter of 2019, let's say. So new Sweet Vicious comic book and or go watch the 10 episodes that aired in 2017.
Excellent.
Nice.
Or read my interview with Jen where she talked shit on Lindsey Graham over on BF.com.
Yeah. Or do all of those things.
Neil, what is your
I have two. And I probably should have saved the first one for next week, because I was thinking about Nutella M&Ms and how that is a thing that's coming out, Nutella M&Ms. And I thought, you know, M&Ms is probably one of the things in this world in which I will try infinite variations of it. Mm. So we always talk about movies and TV shows, you know, just like you were just talking about with Sweet Vicious, where it was a TV show, now it's a comic book, and, you know, if you like Star Wars, there's like 400 different Star Wars things. But M&Ms are definitely one of those things that's on the short list of things that they could make. Like, there was like strawberry M&Ms once. That was okay. Great.
Quick pop quiz hotshot.
Yeah.
What are your top three non-traditional M&M flavors?
Non-traditional?
I would say peanut, plain.
Wait. Plain can't be on a list if non-traditional is at the top of that list.
No. I'm saying that's traditional.
Yeah, you have to define the traditional.
I would say peanut, plain, and like maybe peanut butter are traditional. But peanut plain. Peanut plain are traditional. Everything else is on the table. Hit me.
What are Well, peanut butter is definitely on that list.
Okay.
I would say almond.
Yeah, that's really good. I like the crackle
peanut
ones.
Butter. Yeah, well, the crackle the crunchy, ones are good.
Okay, but guys,
big fan of pretzel.
It's like you're like pulling a Joanna and not listening to the prompt. I said, top three. Neil, go. Well,
I think that's
Dave,
my.
You get to go.
I think that's my three. It's peanut butter, almond, and pretzel.
Okay, Dave, you've got crackle.
Yeah, I'm going to steal almond and actually put that at the top, because if peanut is considered like normal, then I'll definitely take that. And then, if they're mint and specifically in green and white.
Oh, like the...
like a Christmas-y
Yeah, like the holiday specialty mint flavor.
Yeah. Okay. I will also take holiday specialty mint flavor, and I will take crackle, and I will add dark chocolate M&Ms.
Dark chocolate. I've never been a big dark chocolate person, but dark chocolate M&Ms are pretty dope.
Neil, you're so right. This is a really good way to segue into what we will be talking about later. But I know you have another good thing to put in here.
Well, and so the other thing was. Probably, I think the inspiration for this week's episode is The Good Place. I watched the first, I guess it's two episodes have played so far, right?
It's like it was a 1 hour premiere. They're calling it episode one, yeah.
That shit's delightful. Mm-hmm. And Janet's the best. Everybody should go read the article on Film School Rejects that one of my writers, Kira, wrote this week about how Janet really is just the best.
Who does a better Australian accent, Ted Danson or Joanna Robinson?
I think you got it. Honestly, there's no way. There's no way. No reasonable part of my mind thinks that Ted Danson wasn't doing that on purpose.
His bad Australian accent.
I would say, yeah, because he's doing Michael doing an Australian accent.
I also think that Ted Danson can't do an Australian accent.
I don't know. I think this is something we should investigate for sure.
Both A, it's exaggerated, and B, Ted Danson can't do it. Because I've actually never heard Ted Danson do an accent. So I don't believe he has this.
I feel like that's like a thing that the writers like had in they stumbled across. Like, and then can he do an accent? And then someone was like, he doesn't need to. And everyone's like, oh my God, we're geniuses. It's probably all making it.
I feel like they were like.
The conversation she had with herself.
I feel like they were like, can Ted Danson do an accent? Someone looked it up and they were like, hard no. And then they're like, okay, what's a workaround? We'll make a whole joke of how it's bad. Yeah, I have seen the first three episodes and of the season and Screener Brag, and they're great, especially episode three was a real highlight for me. On my other podcast, Still Watching, I have like a 30-minute interview with Michael Schur that's going up this week.
Oh,
and
nice.
He is a total dream boat. So please take a listen to that.
It's the collision of the Joanna verse and the Schur verse.
I asked him, I was like, do you ever refer to it as the Schur verse? He's like, no. The only person who calls it that are the Good Place writers when they want to make fun of me mercilessly.
Nice. I also want to shout out for the Good Place, the best new addition for this second half, which is Kirby Howell-Baptiste, who plays
so
Simone, who is just a ray of sunshine, and I love it.
Since she's a storm of spoilers, can I introduce my spoiler theory that's not based on the first three episodes?
Sure.
Okay. Yes.
I think she's evil.
You think? Oh, you think she's a secret demon?
Here's something that I talked to Michael Schur about this, but he mentioned in an interview with Mo Ryan that I think is over on Vulture. I think that was the one, or maybe I read a bunch of Michael Schur interviews, but he talked about how they did a lot of research into psychology this season. You know, like usually they do research into more moral ethical philosophy, but this season they did a lot of psychology research. And one of the things that they looked into was the Milgram experiments. And so on the conversation that I had with him, I asked him to sort of go into what that is about. But the like finding of the Milgram experiments is that like people with lab coats and clipboards, you know, claiming to have scientific authority are people that you put an undue amount of trust in and can get you to do bad things. So he was like, that's a big thing that we looked at. And I was
this is amazing. I love it.
She wear a lab coat and hold a clipboard. Like, that's my theory. Really not a spoiler because I don't know the answer. It's just a theory. But I like her a lot. I think she's great.
Well, yeah. And we do know that there are evil forces at work.
Sure. In the shape of Adam Scott. So
Adam Scott.
But Adam Scott is the decoy. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, there's the demon that went to interfere with him. But like, what if
this is a theory I can get behind.
So, yes. Are we crackpotting the Good Place? We are. Yay.
I love it. This is the Good Place. That's how you know you're in the
Decodable
Good Place.
Decodable comedy shows. Into it. All right, let's take a pause here and then head off into the rest of the Good Place. That makes it sound like we're talking about the TV show. We're not. Welcome back, by the way. We are talking about various good vibe media in this first segment. We're going to talk about a childhood movie that, you know, makes us feel good. It's a comfort watch, maybe. We could define that either way if we want to. I know Neil might have a distinction between those two things. We might need to, argue about that.
Neil had a real, like,
one of us
place,
had a real crisis.
Yeah, I was about to say, speaking of The Good Place, Neil had a real cheaty moment that I didn't know he had in him when he was, like, fretting over this, like, the gentlest of prompts, which is, like, what's a good, nice thing that brings you comfort? He's like, well, isn't good different from comfort? Like, what are we talking about here? I should say that our lovely listeners sort of ran down a bunch of lovely comfort providing things in our Slack earlier this weekend. We'll be reading some of those aloud at the end. But basically, like, the point, this is something that Neil and I came up kind of on the fly last week, and like in the cloud of the Kavanaugh hearing. We recorded on Friday. The hearing was Thursday. And we were both like, okay, if we're not going to talk about Venom, what should we talk about? And then we basically were like, nice things. How about nice things? So, like, this isn't quite a great debate. Like, we're each going to, like, put forward a candidate or whatever, but it's just, like, our own personal things that bring us joy. Maybe to encourage you to think about a thing that brings you joy, but then also, like, maybe you want to check out the things that bring us joy because you agree generally with Neil or Dave or myself on, like, what is good and comfortable.
Because we have good taste. Yeah. That's why.
We have good taste, but different taste. So you probably each have like one of us that you're like, I usually agree with that person. And then maybe like we'll say something and you're like, oh yeah, I am going to put some shrimp on the babby or whatever it is that we say brings us comfort and find comfort
Excellent.
For yourself.
We have six categories. Some of them are pop culture. Some of them are not. As Joanna said, you could pull some things out. I'm interested to see how many we discover are nostalgia in disguise as we're talking about them, which is maybe what Neil was getting at. Like, is it good? Is it responsible to recommend to people if you, they didn't have the specific background? So I'm gonna kick off with childhood movie because mine is I would pick random James Bond movies. So this is the age pre-streaming, pre-TiVo. I believe was the first one on the market.
It's just whichever one was on
exactly.
TNT.
So what you'd have to do? Well, I wouldn't. Depend on TNT because TNT would have some, but they wouldn't be like on demand.
It's like Moonraker for the 47th time.
So I would buy packs of VHS tapes, and they would be James Bond only VHS tapes. And every time I knew one would be on in the television listings that were published in the paper, I would, if I didn't have it, I would add it to my James Bond VHS tapes. And then in times when I wanted to just randomly watch a movie, I had all of the James Bonds laid out, which is probably how I like my entry to James Bond is still a lot more Roger Moore than it is like Sean Connery, even though Sean Connery is undoubtedly the greatest Bond, I believe, basically because he was the first. But even not being the first for me, I found my way through the man who had the most because it would just be whatever James Bond movie was on. And what that sort of does is it washes out quality judgment. When I was younger, I didn't have the critical capacity that I do now to sort of like mass ingest things. So at some point, if you're watching James Bond and you enjoy it and you lose track of exactly which James Bond it is, in your mind, all the James Bonds get good. So I don't know if I genuinely like all James Bonds or if this like practice of compiling and then watching a franchise taught me something else, but it still works to this day that if there's a James Bond movie on TV that isn't one of the new ones, basically like halfway through Pierce Brosnan, I stopped, you know, because VHS tapes weren't really a thing anymore, and I never picked it back up. But if it's any one of those, I could usually pick out about what movie it is, or at least remember a sequence upcoming or near that shot. That's still part of my childhood. So, like some people do with Harry Potter is when they're constantly on the reruns, I find myself in the middle of James Bond marathons, watching from like the middle of one through an entire another one, and then maybe a quarter into the next one, and stopping, but still feeling completely satisfied in my James Bonding, which is also a good podcast.
So it's like if you no longer see James Bond movies as a linear entity. When you're watching one James Bond movie, you're watching all of the James Bond movies
sort of.
At once.
I mean, and that's sort of how the character works for the most part, just by...
You're like the Amy Adams in Arrival of watching James Bond movies.
All the totems that need to be there, the shaken not stirred, the crazy gadgets and the whatnot, they all belong to the same movie in a way. The archetypal James Bond movie in my mind. Joanna.
I'm gonna agree with you that this segment is definitely like I picked this, like, childhood movies. I'm cheating a little because I love to cheat, but, like, this one is, of course, like, tailored specifically to us. You know what I mean? Like, this brings us comfort because it's something, like, from our childhood, you know? And that's why, I don't know, when I'm at my most charitable, when, like, fanboys get shitty about things, I'm like, it's because it's, like, they feel like it's attacking something, like, profoundly important from their childhood, and they are always chasing that feeling of childhood. That's not an excuse. It's just, like, my most charitable.
And, you know, some people are unnecessarily precious about things.
And 50% of them are Russian bots, apparently, according to a new study. So, good to know.
Yeah, great study about The Last Jedi. All right, so I will say a comfort thing from my childhood to watch is the Anna Green Gables miniseries that aired on, I believe it was the CBC, it's Canadian television regardless, the Kevin Sullivan Productions, starring Megan Follows. There is Anna Green Gables and Anne of Avonlea. There's another one that was made many years later. We don't talk about that one. That's like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Version of Anne of Green Gables. We don't talk about it. It's bad. It's not really based on any of the books. Like, just skip it. Don't watch it. But if you haven't in a while, it, in my opinion, it really holds up. I know almost every woman that is my age watched this growing up. And a lot of men, too, like, watched it with their moms and stuff like that. So, like, this was a huge thing because it aired here on PBS, but it's a Canadian thing. Watch it. It's just, it's lovely. And, like, it's just really sweet and not always saccharine, though sometimes saccharine, but it's just, like, really sweet. And it's why I hate the Netflix version with A Fiery Passion, because I feel like it's far removed from the just niceness. The message of that and the message of The Good Place, too, is, like, it's nice to be nice to other nice people. I was like, I know that sounds so, like, facile, but, like, sometimes we need to be reminded of that. So anyway, Neil, what is your childhood movie association?
I have two, because I don't follow rules. That's how I roll.
Yeah.
really, and these are not necessarily from my childhood. I actually struggled to find one that was, like, from my actual childhood. These are both movies that came out. Well, one of them came out when I was a kid, but I didn't see it until later. But they are pieces of my youth that I like to go back to. One is The Blues Brothers, which is just, like, one of the most fun movies in history. Also involves defeating Nazis. There were a lot where I came back to, it was like, oh, I like that movie. Also, there's a lot of Nazi punching. So now that's a particular headspace that I'm in. But also Empire Records, which does have some more adult things, obviously, but is a very, lovely portrait, sonically pleasing portrait of rebellious youth and damning against the man, and the art of gluing quarters to the floor, and
Rex Manning Day.
Yeah, I mean, Empire Records is
it's October
so great
ad for Netflix. So
whoa,
you might be able to
topical.
Empire Records right now.
Wow, can I put that up for this month's movie?
Oh.
It'll have to go up against, like, Hocus Pocus, which I think
right.
Is, like,
it's gonna have to go up against some real good Halloween fare. But Empire Records, very solid, just joyful in its raging against the machine of corporate America. So there's that.
Excellent. We're gonna stick with media for this first segment or the second topic of the first segment. We're gonna do a movie. But not just any movie, a movie from the last 5 years. So this is to be a relatively new movie that nevertheless brings you some sort of comfort. We're going to start with Joanna this time.
Oh, mine's a really obvious one. I thought I would go for the obvious basic bitch answer and say Paddington and or Paddington 2. I watched it. I watched the first Paddington again this weekend, and I was just a lot of what I needed. And I'm going to take this slick opportunity to mention that, you know, like, coincidentally, a friend of the pod, David Ehrlich, wrote a, like, his, he does this, like, critic survey every week, and the topic this week was the most comforting movies ever made. The header is, of course, from Paddington 2, because David is obsessed with Paddington, and you might want to go over there to get a few more sort of recommendations for comfort movies from a roundup of some of your favorite critics. But yeah, Paddington, the Paddington universe, may it reign forever.
Neil, how about you?
Well, I'm going to stretch the definition of 5 years because
the number five,
this movie, I think it's listed in most places as being from 2012, but I don't think it really showed up until like 2013, 2014. I saw it at a film festival. It is a delightful little movie about a, it's extremely indie. It's called The History of Future Folk. And it's a movie about, this alien who comes to Earth, and he's going to enslave humanity, but he's in a Home Depot buying stuff to make weapons when he hears someone playing music, and he's never heard music before. And the music changes his mind, and he decides that he's going to just hang out on Earth and play music. And then it's all about another alien is sent to kill him, and he hears music, and they just decide to form a band called Future Folk. And it's one of the most delightful. And there's like a kid, what the guy had, the first guy, and he has a daughter, and he has like these adorable father daughter story time sessions where he tells the story of all of his, you know, being an alien warrior. And it's so delightful all the way through. And it is, the music is great. The costumes are very low rent and just delightful. They basically wear buckets on their heads. And it's, yeah, I don't, every minute of it brings me joy.
I'm going to pick Swiss Army Man, which is a movie from 2016, I believe. Look at this. Yes, 2016. Directed by the Daniels, two dudes whose first name is Daniel, known for the Turn Down for What music video with the dancing penis, bring their penis puppetry to the big screen for Swiss Army Man. Paul Dano plays a guy named Hank who's about to commit suicide on a desert island where he's been stranded when the body of Daniel Radcliffe's Manny washes up, and the power of his farts allows him to jet ski off the island and back towards humanity where he might be saved, is how this movie starts in the first 5 minutes. The rest is Manny and Hank hanging out. Manny is the titular Swiss Army Man, and that many of his dead body parts are useful to Hank in surviving, including a compass penis, which is what I was referring to earlier. And one of the most charming, I think it's, there's a bittersweet message in this movie about what it is to be a boy growing into a man, and I think the dangers and fears of that. But it's very whimsically done, to the point where the soundtrack is mostly a cappella from the stars and the filmmakers, and the ending, I believe, leaves you in a good place. So even though there's some dark stuff in there and some ugly truths about being a dude, at the end everyone's where they should be, I think, for Swiss Army Man. I bought it the day it came out on digital download, and it is, I think, my most replayed iTunes purchase movie in my library. Swiss Army Man.
Dave, all of your choices are like tinged with sorrow. I like knowing you. You're an interesting person.
I was making the argument to my friend Matt Patches the other day that, like, ostriching for a reason other than self-care or putting your head in the sand is what I mean by saying ostriching. I shouldn't just say that like a normal person. not paying attention for reasons other than self-care is irresponsible. So anything that helps you take the sadness. Good old spoonful of sugar is what I say, because otherwise you can't look at... You can't look away.
Is that what you say?
Yeah, to me. I'm the one who made that phrase famous.
Papa type? It's real?
Papa type is real. All right. We're going to keep going with media for a TV show. Neil is going to go first this time.
Yes. I have a feeling we're going to talk about a lot of British things in this segment. Mine is The Grand Tour, which is an Amazon show. It was formerly, well, it's complicated. Top Gear still exists on the BBC, but it no longer is hosted by three grumpy old white British guys. The Grand Tour, here's the thing that I love about The Grand Tour. I'm not even a big car person. It's a car show, and it stars Jeremy Clarkson, James May, and Richard, Richard. What the hell is his last name?
Who, Richard Ayoade?
No.
Which Richard?
Richard, he's the guy from the BBC. Oh my God. Am I messing this up? Richard Hammond. Anyway.
Oh, that would have been like my fourth.
Great. I'm just... We're doing great. But The Grand Tour, it's about them reviewing cars and doing, taking trips across Europe. And there's two things that are very happy about this show to me. I mean, like I said, it's three grumpy old white dudes. So it's sort of insufferable in a way, but it's also, their joy of working with each other and, giving each other a hard time, I think is part of the joy. And then, the production of The Grand Tour is amazing. Like the way they shoot, them testing out cars, or the way they shoot these tours through like the Swiss Alps is just it's some of the best like crew work on any television show. And, it's as dramatic as anything you'll see on TV. It's very funny and it's very silly. So The Grand Tour makes me very happy. Here's an example of how it's silly. When they moved from the BBC to Amazon, it was very clear that they were going to be scrapping a segment where they would have celebrities come and they would do an interview with the celebrity, and then the celebrity would go around their test track in, a reasonably priced car. And so then they would like compare them to other celebrities. So like, is Tom Cruise faster than, Sir Richard Attenborough?
Yes.
Those were all great. So when they moved to Amazon,
he agrees with me. Tom Cruise is faster than anyone.
So that was always fascinating. So they made up this whole weird segment about where they were like, we're going to invite these people, like this week's guest is Jeremy Renner. And then they show what we're supposed to believe is Jeremy Renner parachuting in to the set. But then he gets like killed. He lands in the water and dies. So they like for the whole first season of the show, like they made this weird gag where like every celebrity they invited on didn't make it because of some horrific accident. Because they could not afford to book celebrities. So that to me, very funny. I don't know what that says about me. It's probably very telling. But when I need just a good fun, I go to The Grand Tour.
Yeah, I like that. We could do that. We could be like, unfortunately, James Hibbert didn't show up for recording again today. Again. It's like he can't send him so many emails.
Again.
And he won't show up. I'm going to pick King of the Hill. It was an animated show on television from 1997 till 2010. It's been 8 years without King of the Hill. It's been horrible. It is a Mike Judge show. It is the one in between Beavis and Butthead and him sort of transitioning into film, and then eventually coming out of film into Office, or not Office Space, Silicon Valley, which is his current TV show. King of the Hill is spun off of Beavis and Butthead, but much like Daria takes the characters in not Beavis and Butthead direction. And King of the Hill is just so pleasant. It takes place in Texas in the 90s. Most of the problems have to do with neighbors or Bobby, their son, trying to join like some part of youth culture, and Hank, the conservative father, not understanding it. And with the exception of the one episode named Pygmalion, everyone always gets out okay. It's not a big deal. It's an animated sitcom from like a bygone era we don't really have those around anymore. I mean, The Simpsons is around, but only because, you know, taking it off life support is some sort of national crime, apparently. But King of the Hill.
But also, ratings are apparently up for The Simpsons.
Sure. All
right.
I mean, but the thing about The Simpsons being on for so long is I think its characters have become diluted, or to the point where we talk about Flandersization of something as a complex character being reduced to a single totem that is then, like, placed in a Russian roulette of fucking comedy situations. King of the Hill never diluted over 13 seasons. The last episode about a barbecue... Hank and Bobby's relationship has grown a little bit, but they haven't become somehow less complex people. I really enjoy King of the Hill, and I think you could pop in anywhere, but I would guess season four. Season four is really good if you want to just go new. Or I guess anywhere you could find it. In the streaming world, that's what I'm going to tell you. Anywhere you could find King of the Hill, you watch King of the Hill. Joanna.
Yeah.
Okay, so I originally was going to do, like, Frasier here, but you guys have heard me talk about Frasier a lot, so I don't need to talk about that, but Frasier is a comfort show for me. Then I was going to talk about Great British Bake Off, but, like, I mean, you guys have heard plenty of people talk about Great British Bake Off. Everyone knows about Great British Bake Off. And then I was also going to talk about Schitt's Creek, which is this great Canadian TV show, but I've also, like, recently talked about Schitt's Creek on here. What a great show, though. You should watch it. So I thought I would, like, talk about something that I don't think I talk about that much, which is, like, one of my stress relievers that I do is on YouTube. You can find just, like, a shit ton of what the British call panel shows. This is, like, a phenomenon in England that we don't really have here, where, like, there are a bunch of different shows on the BBC and ITV, mostly BBC, I think, that a bunch of British comedians will, like, sit behind desks and do things. Let me explain it a little bit better. My favorite of late to watch is a show called Would I Lie to You, which is hosted by Rob Brydon, who a lot of Americans know from his films with Steve Coogan. And then team captain on one side is the comedian David Mitchell. And then on the other side is Lee, whose last name I can't remember right now. Fuck. But anyway, they each have two guests on their team every week. And then they, like, go back and forth sort of, like, lying to each other and interrogating each other. And it sounds really dumb, but in fact, it is hilarious. And, cause sometimes they're lying and sometimes they're not. So basically they're, like, kind of playing a game, but it's not really about keeping score or winning. It's not like watching celebrities play fucking Pictionary. It's like because they're British and they're comedians, they're just, like, so sharp and so witty, and so everything they say is just, like, really, really charming. So Would I Lie to You, my gateway drug to panel shows is Big Fat Quiz of the Year, which is a long trivia game with three teams of two British comedians and occasionally American comedians, like Chelsea Peretti's been on, Kristen Schaal's been on, that they do around New Year every year. So those are all up on YouTube. Countdown is another one. Mock the Week, QI, Never Mind the Buzzcocks. Like, these are all things that you can just, like, find a British comedian you like Noel Fielding or, like, you know, Richard Ayoade or whoever it is, and, like, follow them around to these various panel shows, and they all guest on each other's shows, and it's, like, all one big insular club of mostly white dudes, but there are occasional ladies and some non-white dudes. And the last thing I will say, and this one's so much harder to find Americans, but if you can, it's very rewarding, is something called Taskmaster, which is, like, much more of a game show, but with, once again, these, like, same pool of British comedians. And it is one of the most enjoyable things I've ever seen in my entire life. So my comfort TV, like, I guess I watch it because I know I don't have to cover it. And so it's just, like, TV I can watch that I don't have to think about. I can just enjoy. So British panel shows, easily accessible. I don't know if it's legal, but, like, I think... You know, if they're up on YouTube, and
you haven't,
like,
paid
not
for your license.
Hard to find.
No,
you just, like, you just type.
I'm sorry, I don't get the ITV player.
You just type "Would I Lie to You" into YouTube, and it, like, comes up. And I feel like YouTube is, like, pretty litigious about this sort of thing. So, like, there's got to be some sort of, like, loophole where this British television, but not all British television, is available.
Where it's apparently. it's like inverted, or it's, like, flipped around, so it's the wrong way. So it gets past the YouTube copyright filter.
It's not that. I think it's just, like, maybe it's because it's, like, not scripted. they don't have the same copyright laws. I don't know what it is, but it's all there. So
nice.
Check it out. It's really, 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 really enjoyable.
British talk shows. We're going to be back with more panel shows.
Not talk shows. Not the same.
Sorry. I apologize.
Yeah, get that Graham Norton shit out of here.
I love Graham Norton, though.
We're going to be back with more good vibes after this break and some names.
All right, so we are now going to thank some members of our small council. I'm going to kick it off, and I wanted to start by thanking someone who I think we neglected to thank last month, which is Tasia Pender. I believe that's how you pronounce her name. Maybe it's Tasia. If I got it wrong, please let me know. As always, if we get your name wrong, please do DM me on the Patreon Slack, and I will put in a little pronunciation guide. So I'm going to kick off with thanking AJ Cavage, Abby Grenier, Adam Wells, Adrian Martinez, Ajax, Alejandro Villarreal, Alexander Walgren, Alyssa Scott, Amber Vickers, Amy H., Amy Reichert, Amy Gomez, Amy Calhoun, and Andrea.
Hey, it's Dave. He's back. He's going to mispronounce your names, but thank you very much. Anna K. Jackson, Annie A.K., Aubrey Iyer, Ben Gorman, Bethany Townsend, Billy Bosky, Brandy Mandato, Bria, Brian Morawski, Brianne Polito, Bronwyn Beck, Brian Rapp, Bryce Quine, Cameron Fowler, and Chris Saunders.
You know the like name fatigue has set in when like Dave stumbles on Brian Rapp.
I will do my best not to stumble through these names, but I can't promise anything. But I'm going to thank Chris Miracle, Christina Klein, Christina Sullivan, Christopher Magrani, Chuck Parkey, Cody Draggeese, Corey Hilsey, Corey Hume, Crystal Kirk, Dan Cleland, trying it out, Dan, sorry, Daniel Baltima, Danielle, David Cox, David Adams, and David Kaplos. And that's it. Those are all the names.
Yeah. And we're back with more good vibes. We're going to take it out of the media or out of the visual media for this second half. And then also after we're done, end with some things from you, our listeners. But first, we got to talk about comfort food, not specifically types of comfort food, but food you eat for comfort. Neil Miller.
This obviously tough one. I'm a big stress eater, so I eat for comfort a lot. And you know, pretty much anything could be on the menu. Queso is a big one. Like if I'm, you know, I'm really stressed. Like if I go and I brave the drive through at Torchy's Tacos, which takes like 40 minutes to just get some queso. So there's that. But the real one is food that is just every time I eat it, I feel slightly better, which is watermelon. And I think it's a texture thing. It's both the obvious sweetness and delicious taste of watermelon, but the texture of, and I like to go buy just the little cups of the chopped up watermelon. I don't like to do any work to get to my food. I just want to eat the food that I want to eat. So I buy the pre-cut watermelons. And I just sit there and eat. It's the only thing that I eat slowly. Everything else I eat very quickly. But watermelon, I will slow down and be like, watermelon. Feels good.
Save it.
So there you go.
Mine is...
I'm sorry. It's the only food that I will eat slowly.
Mine's also kind of tied to media and, once again, nostalgia, which is my mom used to also watch the two neighbor boys as well as me and my brother when we were in our, like, I don't know, 6 to 12s sort of years, which can be some tough years for a single woman and, you know, with whose husband's off at work trying to take care of four boys. So my mom's solution was we could watch once a month the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, move all of the furniture out of the living room, put down towels over the entirety of the living room floor, go to the grocery store. We would have like a budget to buy as many different types of ice cream and ice cream fixings as we could, bring it all back, make the sundaes in the living room while the TV was on because the towels were down, and so there was no way we could make a mess.
This is so involved and sounds so fun.
This is and so watch, great. Your mom rules.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And then she would just take all the towels and wrap them up and wash them all in a thing and all the furniture get moved back in. So although I do like lots of foods that, you know, can bring me comfort in specific ways, if I have like just a whole bunch of like generic, whatever your, you know, local grocery store's brand of generic like vanilla ice cream is with like sprinkles and caramel and whipped cream and like a weird movie, that does it for me.
That's so lovely. I have a question. Does the ice cream taste better with or without a cigarette that you have smoked?
Oh, see, I don't need, like, necessarily mix those two, because one's like for 8-year-olds and one is illegal for 8-year-olds.
Dave revealed to us before the podcast that he used to have a habit of smoking a cigarette in the shower, which is, as I pointed out, the Frenchiest thing I've ever heard. All right. So I did a like a cheaty slash anxiety Neil thing and decided to distinguish between stress eating and comfort food because like I had this really weird encounter in San Francisco last night and on the way home, there's a Taco Bell literally across the street from us and like I never go there. And I went there last night because I needed to stress eat something.
What so did you stress eat at Taco
like,
Bell?
Some sort of. I don't know what it's called. There's like, there was like,
don't describe what was in it because that will apply to 60 different things. Oh. So you don't know what it was called. Was it rolled? Was it?
Well, there was some like bean paste.
No. Well, I was going to say like, it was like a crunchy flat taco shell thing. And then like all the goop shit that you find in Taco Bell and then like
Crunchwrap Supreme.
Like sort of origami.
Oh, it was a Crunchwrap. Yeah.
Crunchwrap Supreme.
Good job.
That's
good
what
job,
I had.
Team.
Okay. But I wouldn't call that comfort food because I didn't feel like, I guess I felt comforted, but I wasn't like, yes, good decision. I feel happy. I was like, oh God, I put some like processed beef on this. This was, my comfort food, I would say, is this like one specific dish that I make quite often. It's kale with sausage and white beans. And it's just like, it's super easy to do because you basically just like bung a bunch of things in a pot and like slow cook it. It doesn't even take that time long to cook. You barely have to chop a thing. You're just like opening cans of beans, like, you know, hucking sausage and, kale and some chicken broth and some spicy flakes and stuff like that in a thing. It makes the house smell amazing. You eat it and it like, it's like that stick to your ribs sort of comfort food, but because the kale's in there, you feel pretty good about it. the recipe that I use is on a website called simplyrecipes.com. It's just called kale with sausage and white beans. It's super cheap if you're on a budget, like, you know, can stretch for days, make some rice, put it on top. Your house will smell amazing. You will feel sated.
Have you ever tried to like cooking show this up and like crush the white beans and make it like a faux bangers and mash, but like a healthy one?
I have not, but I'm willing to experiment.
Fascinating. I think that's one very underrated thing about comfort food in the more traditional sense is that it's as much about the way the house smells.
Yes.
Right.
As it is about, like, the food itself, you know? So, like, chili for me is one where it's, like, when it's fall, like, it feels good to just, like, have chili in the crock pot all day.
I made myself a crock pot this season.
Shout out to Smell. An Instant Pot. Instant Pots are pretty dope.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was almost going to do, like, a soup, but I was like, well, there's no soup that I make regularly, but I make this white bean sausage kale thing, like, all the time.
Sounds good.
It's really good.
So yep, it's called the Joanna now. Now that we've established that, we're going to move on to music. We've each picked some music that makes us feel good. I'm going to go first because mine takes a little bit of explaining. I picked the full version of the BoJack Horseman theme. For those of you that like the podcast Song Exploder, it's a podcast where people take songs they've written and talk about each of the parts and how they came up with it, both creatively and arrangement and technically. And one of the episodes last year, or a year and a half they put on, was the BoJack Horseman theme. It's done by Patrick Carney, who is one of the Black Keys. And Patrick, for years, just as a hobby, has been making music with his uncle, Ralph Carney, who happens to be a multi-instrumentalist from, like, back in the day, like, you know, playing on Sting albums and stuff because he was the dude that was in the studio that day. He and his Patrick from the Black Keys would be sending tapes back and forth making songs, and one of them is the song that became the BoJack Horseman theme. Patrick came up with the sort of timed clicking tubular sounding thing that the theme starts with, the do 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 do, and then the drum beat, and then the guitar strum, and then sent it off to his uncle, who just picked up an alto sax that he had in his apartment and some other instruments and threw it all together. And then he sent those tracks back to Patrick, and Patrick arranged it into a song and didn't really know what to do with it. It was just something he made with his uncle until someone called him up and asked if he had interest in doing a BoJack Horseman theme song. And he's like, I have this, you know, kind of melancholy groove with this sax I worked on with my uncle. And it became the BoJack Horseman theme. If you go and subscribe to Song Exploder now, they re-released the episode 2 weeks ago because, unfortunately, Ralph Carney has passed away. So as a memorial, they re-released the BoJack Horseman episode, which has, you know, him and his nephew talking about collaborating to create this song. So even though the show is about maybe depression, I think, like, the rising horns and the full version, which includes some amazing saxophone, is actually very jubilant, and I like it. It's a dude and his uncle making music together.
Yeah, there was like a sweet little like tribute to Ralph Carney, like hidden in the season of BoJack Horseman this season. That is lovely. I should say that when we were like putting this list together and Dave put that on there, I like gave him shit, as I did elsewhere in this episode, for picking like such a depressing thing for his comfort music. Just cause BoJack is like so much about depression. But it is a very good theme song. So, maybe it is actually like super uplifting because like the episode ends and everything's like kind of sad. And then it's like jauntily kicks in, and I always listen to it all the way through the credits because like Netflix tries to roll me in the next episode. I'm like, no, damn it, I'm gonna listen to the song. So yeah.
Neil.
Yes, hi. So mine, I guess it's interesting because you could play this one of two ways. Either it's the good vibes of like something upbeat that sort of lifts you up. For me, when I'm seeking a good place mentally, emotionally, I like to go with something soothing, like a Miles Davis, like just set up like a Miles Davis, Apple Music, channel, and just sort of let it play. And it brings in other artists and just something sort of, both, soothing and interesting and layered. And probably more complex, I guess. You know, one of the ways to de-stress is to simplify, but this is sort of the opposite of that. You know, some jazz. You know, maybe even some, well, blues is more of a, like B.B. King style blues. That's more of a, like, when you just want to wallow right. in it. But, like, jazz, there's such life to it at times that, you know, it's very serene, it's very calming in a lot of ways, but there's also like these bursts of, you know, excitement, and I like that about
jazz.
A little
while back I used to do a lot of writing to Bitches Brew, which is two songs on each side and each one's like 7 to 14 minutes, but you could just ride
right.
you could ride that for like an hour and 45
well,
minutes.
Yeah, and that's like the great thing about it is you lose track of where one song starts and where the others end. So it's just this sort of tonal experience that you're there. I like, you know, just lay on the couch and experience some jazz. Mm.
It's going to be hard to outclass that, but Joanna's going to try.
Oh, Well, genuinely, I this is not me trying to like get pretension points. Genuinely, you know, if I want to like feel very like comforted, I put on, I just type Beethoven into Spotify. This is a true fact about me. So I just listen to Beethoven. Occasionally I'll listen to like Bach cello. But you know, it's, I'm pretty much a Beethoven person. So, yeah, I don't know what else to say.
Specifically Beethoven though, really not like just it. Classical music.
Yeah, Beethoven and, like I said, some Bach cello, like I'll listen to Yo-Yo Ma, I think has like a Bach cello album that I listen to. But mostly Beethoven, yes. Not just any old basic bitch classical music, but one specific basic bitch classical music, Beethoven.
Nice.
And I should say that I pronounce it the way that they pronounce it in the Gary Oldman film Immortal Beloved, where he plays the composer himself, and they say Beethoven. Hoven, and that's what I say alone in my house sometimes. So, you're welcome to my brain.
Well, we're going to go deeper into the brain with our last group topic, which is a random thing. You could just pick a random thing that gives you good vibes. Neil, let's start with you.
This one was probably the hardest one, because I was like, what random things do I even do in my life? And that turned into its own existential crisis. So in order to calm down from that, the crisis caused by this prompt, I played a couple games of Two Dots, which is an iPhone game. I like puzzle games, matching games. So like Two Dots, the one, there's one called Letterpress. There's called Dots and Co. They're just basic puzzle games. And there's nothing complicated about them. I mean, some of them are hard, but it's an idle distraction, which I think is sometimes distracting your own mind is an important element of self-care. So I like little like iPhone puzzle games and shit.
Yeah, and Two Dots is very pleasingly designed as well.
It is. It's got that flat sort of muted color design. It's great.
Joanna.
I thought we were thinking of doing like a whole like book sort of thing. But,
we were thinking. Joanna kept asking, should we do books? And everybody just kept being like, is she going to put it in?
Cool.
And I was so like, I don't even like books.
I'm keep my desk level, I guess.
I'm just going to rattle off some things that I read as a kid that like really got me into fantasy that I revisit often. There's an author named Tamara Pierce who wrote a bunch of different series like Wild Magic, et cetera, et cetera. But my favorite are the Alana books, the I think it's like the Lioness Quartet or the Song of the Lioness Quartet she wrote. Like these are things that I read before I understood like what like girl power and feminism was. It was just like, I don't know. I was just like, oh, this is cool. And now I feel like, this is going to make me sound like so old and unwoke, but now I feel like there's just too much emphasis being like, what if a knight, but a girl? And I'm like, well, I didn't even think of it that way. It was just like, she was a girl and it was cool. Anyway, and then Patricia Redd, Redde, wrote The Enchanted Forest Chronicles. It's four books, searching for dragons, calling on dragons, talking to dragons, and one of the thing that you do with dragons. Favorite depiction of dragons, favorite depiction of witches, just a really good like twist on fairy tale storytelling. The Art of Trina Shart Hyman like designed all the covers for the Patricia Redd original Enchanted Forest Chronicles. She also did a whole bunch of children books. So like, she did a beautiful Sleeping Beauty. She did a beautiful Snow White. Like I have picture books like of all of her stuff. She has like a million Caldecott awards for her drawing, I believe. And, I'm a big fan of her stuff. And then the last one I will mention is a book called The Hero and the Crown, which I am still, waiting for them to adapt. And like, I just don't know why, like all this stuff about like lady knights and dragons, like I don't understand why production companies are not hopping on this to capitalize on like the Game of Thrones momentum. But The Hero and the Crown is a fantasy novel written by Robin McKinley. Came out in 1985. It's about a young, woman, a young royal woman who decides to become a dragon slayer because there are dragons that are ravaging her countryside. So these are like things that I will just like pick up and reread, at the drop of a hat if I am in need of some comfort.
Nice. Mine are, nice. All my, like, comfort reads are all, like, children's books, so it would be...
These are essentially children's books. They're just, you know, they're, like, I guess a little, like, YA-ish, but they're still children's books, you know?
Well, I think YA-ish is still a little bit more respectable than what I'm about to talk about right now. I like opening new action figures and posing them. I attempted to explain this to Java's uncle when he came to visit and saw my display case, and he's like, well, do you play with them? And I'm like, yeah, play with them, you know, put the Simpsons figures and place them in different, you know, play sets and see what, you know, things come out, and it's great. Why is Bart in the radio station? This is fun. But what I really do and what I really get joy out of, and even when I was a little kid, was action figures are sculpted a certain way and then placed in positions so you could play with them, but I always kind of hated that, so I would pose them back in the original sculpts. Like, if you look at, like, an action figure that has, like, a muscular leg, you could tell where they segmented the leg in order for it to bend a certain way, and that usually makes the muscle lines not line up. So take that together with my love of Spider-Man. My thing is basically I collect Spider-Man action figures, which are super poseable and have a bunch of different possible things that look good with their sculpts. And I buy the ones I want, and I save them fully wrapped because I know that I'm going to either have a bad day or need to reward myself for getting a project done. And that's when I get to open it, pose it, and mount it. And then usually not really touch it again until I have to repose it. That's what I like to do for myself.
I feel like this is a really sweet version of our, like, do the weird stuff episode that we did a little while ago, except for that part where Neil, like, clarified what he eats slowly. That was just, like, the less G-rated installment of this episode.
It's my, the other thing that I do when it's the self-sabotage of when things are going well. Too many good vibes are not good. I'm going to throw a little trash in there.
Well, Joanna has done the job of curating some other good things suggested by our Patreons in this one of the more horrible weeks to be alive in America. Joanna, how can our listeners help us?
I just have a few things, and they're things that I agree with, so sorry, they're all biased, but, like, Kathy mentioned this, and I thought it was interesting. Kathy, in our Slack, wrote, the phenomenon of Love Actually being a not great movie with lots of good vibes that I still feel like I have to watch once a year, and that's true. I do the exact same thing. Like, if someone asked me to defend Love Actually, I could not. Do I watch it every year?
All right, I have a question then, specifically for you and Kathy.
Yeah.
I've never seen Love Actually. Mm.
Let me what speak do I do? For Kathy, yes.
Continue living my life blissfully unaware?
No. You know what?
God, that drew Java out of the room. Yes, I've never seen Love Actually.
Oh my God.
Fascinating.
This is like
reveal.
When we found out you hadn't watched Labyrinth. Jeez.
All right.
All right.
This is like when one of my roommates texted me this week and was like, I can't believe Joanna's never seen Bad Boys.
Theo texted us.
Oh.
Nope. It was Kim.
Kim? Really? Yeah. Oh, no. I disappointed Kim. I feel really bad about that. Oh, shit. Kim and Theo and Neil once again generously let me stay in their house. They're the nicest people in the whole world. All right. Emily, I really think we should consider doing Love Actually for our December live watch, because, like, people who hate it will enjoy hate watching it, and people who like it will enjoy like watching it, and then we all get to watch Dave watch it for the first time, which will be
it really hilarious. Is. It's the deep blue sea of Christmas movies.
It really is. All right. Emily says Terry Pratchett novels. If you've never read a Discworld book, they're great fun fantasy. The Discworld books are the Tiffany Aching books. If you're an audiobook person, there's no audiobook I like more than the Terry Pratchett audiobooks narrated by Stephen Briggs. They are joy for your ear holes if you like fantasy and like sort of irreverent British comedy. Speaking of irreverent British comedy, Misha suggests P.G. Wodehouse novels. Those are once again hilarious, really, really funny. There was a TV miniseries or TV show with Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry called Jeeves and Wooster that is based on the P.G. Wodehouse novels. But, you know, you could watch that or you could read these books, and they're just, like, really dry and droll funny. PG Woodhouse. Last one is from Emily McQ, who says, who has like a bunch of little like of animated. We didn't talk about animation, which is off brand for us. Emily says, someone said Steven Universe. I would add Adventure Time, Gravity Falls, and Over the Garden Wall. Dave, isn't it the time
it is? I'm just pulling up the log off season schedule and being like, is there a week we don't have something that we could do Over the Garden Wall?
Oh, it would be great. Over the Garden Wall, delightful. So
we could put it in between Halloween and X-Men Dark Phoenix, which is not coming out at the end of October like we planned.
Oh, Dark Phoenix is not coming out in October.
It's literally not even coming out when we said it was going to come out on last week's podcast.
Last week, it's been moved. Wait, Dave, let me get your expert opinion really quickly on that, since you weren't here when we were talking about it. Is moving Dark Phoenix to the summer a vote of confidence or a vote of no confidence?
I'm going to say no confidence. If they were super confident in what they had as an X-Men movie, they would want to get it out before everybody started talking about what Marvel's going to do with the X-Men, which is going to be next summer. So, I'm also interested to see if New Mutants just doesn't end up coming out theatrically at this point.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting. All right, so those are all our comfortable things.
Yeah.
If we miss something that you feel like, you know, people should know about, like, you know, shout it out in the Slack, tweet at us, email us, stormerspoilers@gmail.com. Let's all just, like, be comfortable. We had our first major rain last night. October's my favorite month. My birthday's tomorrow. It smells of, like, fresh rain here in the Bay Area. I love this month. I'm so happy to be alive, except the world is garbage. So let's just keep insulating ourselves with comfort.
On Saturday, I wore sweatpants for the first time.
Yes.
In the year, which is a big moment because it means that it's cold enough, not just for me, not just for sweatpants, but like for me to wear sweatpants because like, I'm normally running like 20 degrees warmer than everyone else.
This is like Groundhog Day. It's like when Neil has broken out his sweatpants, you know that there are four more months of winter.
If I make it more than an hour in the sweatpants, then it's going to be a cold one.
Neil, from the Nostradamus position of your fall sweatpants, what are we doing next week?
Well, I've looked into our future, and I see two entities living inside one body, and that is, from what I understand, Tom Hardy living inside whatever the fuck that Venom movie is. So we are Venom next week. We will be seeing Venom. I believe we've all three agreed to see Venom. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. I'll see it.
Okay. That was just a moment where if anybody needed an out,
that was it.
That was
it's
the
gone
moment.
Now. Everybody's in to see Venom.
It's gone now. We are pot committed to seeing whatever the hell this Venom movie is. Can't wait. And I assume we'll talk, you know, we're going to talk a little Spider-Verse this week, but I assume we'll talk live action Spider-Verse. Versus the 600 different characters that could be made into movies, that Sony can keep their Spider-Man.
Oh, I think actually, me having not seen the movie, but making this my job.
I know of
four
the movie.
Potential sequel planting characters with names in the comics are in.
Four.
Nice.
I only know about one, so that's exciting.
So there's not just like a scene where they walk by a bunch of like cages where the Vulture used to be.
Well, I mean,
which stupid that? Spider-Man movie
yeah,
is that?
Yeah, which movie was that? That was an Andrew Garfield one, right?
I think it was Dane DeHaan walking through Oscorp.
Remember how Felicity Jones is getting a black cat?
Yeah. Remember how one of those Mark Webb Spider-Man had probably the most disconcerting death in a superhero movie ever?
Which one?
When they drop Emma Stone and she like bangs her head.
You know, guys.
Man, still
I
haven't
made,
recovered.
Cut of that movie.
I think Jamie Foxx was
movie
in that one.
And just cut out all of the Green Goblin, and it's a really enjoyable romp where Peter lets her go to college in Europe. And Jess is like, whoa. remember
how Paul... Okay, this is the last thing we should say, because like we're basically bleeding into our bonus podcast, which is all Spider-Man stuff. But remember how Paul Giamatti was like,
yeah,
the rhino? Like,
yeah.
Oh, Spider-Verse, you are fucked. We're going to talk about you in our bonus podcast.
You are so infinite.
About the ways in which you are unfucked, right? There are two specific ways in which the Spider-Verse, or three, Tom Holland, in which the Spider-Verse is unfucked, and we are going to talk about that in our Patreon-only bonus.
And there might be three.
Yeah. You're like the M&Ms of comic book movies.
Tune in next week. Maybe there's three.
There's
maybe,
so many
maybe you go, you listener, have decided already that you're not going to see A Star Is Born and instead are going to see Venom because you're not going to let botnets win. And maybe you enjoy Venom. Maybe there's three.
Okay, but I saw A Star Is Born last night and it was good, so you should see it. Also, I haven't heard the Eminem Venom theme song, but I've only heard the hosts of the Empire podcast do their impressions of the Eminem Venom theme song, which just goes like, Venom, Venom, Venom. And so that's my impression of the Empire podcast host's impression of
spoilers for next week. No movie of the year 2018 should have an Eminem theme song. Until next week, when we get deeper into that and into our own symbiosis, where can people find you online?
Oh, Eminem the rapper,
not Peanut or
God, almond. I was so confused about the candy for
almond
a minute.
Or Nutella.
It's like pretzel. The raisin Eminem. It's like the bad
where
one.
Can people find more of your work online?
If you're so inclined, you can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can get me on twitter.com/@rejects. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers or email us stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
Joanna Robinson.
Sorry. Drop something. You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter @JoeWroteThis. And otherwise, I will see you in the Slack.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter @DA7E. You can find my other podcasts, Fighting in the War Room, at fightingintheWarRoom.com. This week, you can find me on Thrillist.com, talking about the origins of the Venom symbiote and the symbiote family, which I'm just now realizing I should have done as a fucking Zendaya's Michi thing and be like, and Lasher's the green one. And Scream is the yellow one. Riot, he's just gray and boring. Anyway.
Venom, Venom.
Perfect.
Venom, Venom.
I want you to know that I have no fucking clue what any of that
good.
Was.
Good. Go to Thrillist.com on Thursday and learn about the symbiote family from me. But until then, you could find all of us on Twitter @StarWarsSpoilers. And, guys... It's October, the 10th month of a 12-month year. If you have managed not to fall down, I commend you. You are almost there. Don't fall down.